Better than carnage. Orso woke to the clanging of Corporal Halder's truncheon on the bars of his cellar. He much preferred the word cellar to dungeon. The place was designed for wine, after all, even if the purpose it was being put to now was, one had to admit, more than a bit dungeony.
"Wake up, Your Majesty," grunted Halder.
Orso sighed, then flung back the rags he preferred to call blankets, and swung his feet to the clammy floor. Bloody hell, it was cold down here. But then it was cold everywhere. He took perverse pleasure in tolerating the same conditions his least fortunate subjects must be enduring. He used to have such privilege and such guilt. He felt far lighter carrying neither one. Hildy had been busy scrubbing his other shirt, in cold water, of course, since that was all that could be had. Now she was pegging it up to dry near the bars. The washing had frozen there a couple of times, cloth turned stiff as chilly card.
"Get back from the door, girl,"
said Halder, keys in his hand. Orso distracted him by ostentatiously stretching.
"You know, my mother searched for years to find a bride who'd meet my standards, but we never could light upon quite the right balance of outstanding beauty, impeccable breeding, piercing intellect, ethereal grace, subtle diplomacy, and boundless patience." He pressed one hand to his chest.
"If only you'd presented yourself at the time, Corporal Halder, perhaps there'd be a royal heir or two already." Halder stared at him with those heavy-lidded eyes.
"You reckon you're quite the funny fucker, don't you?"
"Laughter is a tonic in hard times. I have your welfare in mind."
"No one laughs where you're going."
"What does that mean?" asked Hildy, frowning at him.
"His Majesty has been sent for."
And Halder pulled the barred door open.
"Oh, damn."
Orso draped himself as nonchalantly as he could against the damp pillar in the middle of the cellar.
"Must I really leave my suite?"
"Afraid so."
"Have the chef prepare my morning repast for my return, Hildy."
And he flounced from the cell. He knew how much his attendants hated it when he did that. He much preferred the word attendants to jailers. He hadn't realized how warm it was beneath the palace until he stepped into the open air.
"It's like winter's tits out here," he gasped.
The gardens were all frozen, every branch on every tree picked out with a line of snow, the drainpipes dangling with glinting icicles, the heaps of fallen leaves from the creeper that covered the palace walls glittering with frost. It might have been beautiful had he been better dressed, but even wearing every stitch he still possessed, the air had a bitter bite. He was not sure whether to blow on his hands or wedge them under his armpits. He settled for blowing on the left one while wedging the right and swapping them every few strides.
"Where are we going, anyway?"
"Oh, you'll love it," said Halder, with a glance over his shoulder that implied he wouldn't. Not that Orso had liked anything for some weeks now. Before the great change, he'd often joked that being High King of the Union was the worst job in the world. After the great change, it wasn't even a joke. He'd heard they were selling night pots with his face on the inside of the bowl. Once, the ladies of Adua had scrambled into his bed. Now they queued up to shit on him. He could hardly say he didn't deserve it. Snow was falling on the park, just dirty spots and specks against the house of the Maker, silhouetted in the winter haze. The place was almost empty. Lonely figures wobbled on the icy pathways, smoke pluming from their faces. A pair of children, ridiculously underdressed for the season, were chasing each other around, leaving spirals of footprints, hands and faces, chapped pink, scraping up snow and flinging it. Not so much snowballs as pointless showers of glittering powder. Their giggles rang out as they flopped down together in the white.
"Good to see someone's having fun," muttered Orso.
He rather wished he could join them. especially once his destination became clear. They were calling it the House of Purity now, of course, but its aspect was no more comforting, the same lowering, near-windowless facade. The same guards, prisoners, questions. Even the crimes were mostly the same. Only the direction of the treason had changed. He had visited several times in the past for unpleasant interviews with Archlector Glockter, but he had never before had cause to go below ground level. He worried that the interviews conducted down here were a great deal more unpleasant yet. It was dim and chill as an ice house. No romance to the place, a cheap workmanlike feel, and it smelled of damp. Halder knocked on a heavy door bound with iron. Also wondered how he would respond to torture. Badly, he suspected. Who responds well? And what possible preparation could a life of cosseted indulgence be, after all, for expertly and ruthlessly applied pain? He closed his eyes, trying to find that breezy courage that had somehow welled up in him at Stauffenbeck. "Come in." The room was a sparse white box, plaster-speckled, with mould in one corner. There was something that looked like a badly scrubbed bloodstain on one badly whitewashed wall. There was a battered table with two battered chairs. One was empty. In the other, regarding him coolly, with those hard eyes that never gave anything away, was Inquisitor Teufel. Or Chief Inspector Teufel now, he supposed. Everything had a different title than before the great change. Well, not quite everything. He had the same title, but it meant the opposite. Teufel looked up at Halder. "You can go." "Reckon I'd better stay." Her forehead showed a beautifully regular set of creases as she frowned. "What's your name?" Also only wished he had been able to so easily unsettle the man.
"Why do you want to know that?"
"So I can tell Commissioner Pike who's putting themselves in his way." Halder swallowed noisily, lump on his throat bobbing.
"I'll wait outside."
And he shut the door ever so politely behind him. "Chief Inspector Teufel," called Orso. "What a lovely surprise, and what a fetching uniform. This has been a delightful outing so far, I must say. Are we touring all the cellars of the Agrant? There must be miles of—"
"I found a letter, Your Majesty, in your bread."
There was a brief and highly uncomfortable silence. Orso struggled to stay upbeat, in spite of the yawning pit of panic that had just opened beneath his chair.
"You must be in desperate straits if you're stealing my bread, Inspector. It's positively horrible."
"We're all in desperate straits." Teufel slid out a stained slip of paper, very like the ones Hildy had been bringing him since Tunny's visit to his attic. "Royalist traitors are pressing the People's Army hard out there in the east of Middleland, and from what I read, it looks like you're in contact with Lord Marshal Forrest."
So there it was. He had been very much looking forward to seeing the murderous smile wiped from Judge's face, preferably by a fall from the Tower of Chains, but he supposed the chances of discovery had always been high.
"I've told him to desist, but you know how hard it is to stop an admirer once they have the bit between their teeth. No doubt, I'm besieged by the bastards."
She slowly unfolded the letter, glanced from the writing to Orso's face. Bloody hell, those eyes. When it came to hiding secrets and to digging them out, he could scarcely have been further out of his league and well knew it.
"Seems Forrest and his royalists want to put you back on the throne. Seems they're in touch with your mother and sister out in Sipani. Seems they've been sending you messages via your servant."
"I take full responsibility,"
he said far too eagerly and probably very ill-advisedly. But when Hildy's safety was at stake, the time for jokes was over.
"My servant knew nothing about any plot."
Teufel was holding up a hand to stop him. She glared down, teeth bared, as if working herself up to some distasteful task. Orso did not care to imagine what kind of threats, blackmail, or torture might give her pause. She tapped a chewed fingernail on the scarred tabletop, witness to who knew what horrors under the old regime and the new, then finally looked up at him. When she spoke, her voice had turned oddly soft.
Forrest isn't the only one who'd like to see the monarchy restored.
Orso had steeled himself for almost anything but that.
He isn't?
No. She considered him a moment longer.
This madness has gone on long enough. Far too long. Judge has to be stopped.
She gave a shrug of resignation, shoulders slumping.
And since no one else is doing it.
Orso felt a wave of relief that came close to loosening his bowels.
You mean to help me?
Against my much better judgment. The truth is, far as I can tell, you're the Union's best chance.
You think I...
And Orso felt the smile spread right across his face, a sensation he had not experienced in quite some time.
Don't get carried away, Your Majesty. I'm saying you're better than carnage, famine, and chaos. Honestly, that's the closest thing to praise I've heard in months.
And not from a source prone to compliments. Orso shuffled eagerly forwards.
What's your plan?
She struck him as a woman who did not get out of bed without three or four strong plans in place.
I mean to say, do you have a plan?
Not one I like the odds on, but I can think of a few people who might be brought around to your cause, with the right encouragement, the right threats, the right bribes. Orso patted his trousers.
I seem to be a little light at the moment. In fact, I've a hell of a debt to my valet. You'd never guess what a shirt costs these days.
Four chairs on the closed council. Orso raised his brows.
Do you plan to drape yourself across them?
I plan to sell them.
Four chairs are a high price. I'd say it's a pretty low price, given right now you don't have any chairs at all.
He pushed out his lips in a pout.
I have an old box to sit on, actually. Hildy and I call it the throne. When I'm feeling beneficent, she gets the corner. I was thinking, once I am restored, I might have it installed in the actual throne room to keep me humble.
He wondered if he might have coaxed the hint of a smile from the corner of Teufel's unbendable mouth.
You could do with some help in that regard. And, let us be honest, in every other. So, I have your permission to make offers. Might I ask to whom? Might be better if you didn't.
You'll be talking to my enemies.
If it works, you'll have fewer enemies and more friends. Isn't that what everyone wants?
Orso sat there for a moment. He was cold, he was drained, and he suspected it would not be much longer until Judge removed him from his cage in the court of the people and put him in the dock. He needed to trust someone, and honestly, if Victorine Dan Teufel wanted to betray him, there had been golden opportunities when she had far more to gain.
You have my permission for this and anything else. You can speak with my full authority, such as it is. And can I say, honestly, for once, that there is no one I would rather have on my side. From the first moment I met you, I have always felt safe in your hands, Inquisitor Teufel, or Inspector Teufel, or Vic.
She pressed her fist on the tabletop, took a long breath through her nose, and let it sigh away.
If we're going down in flames together, it might as well be on first name terms. Well, Vic, I have no doubt there is a healthy dose of self-interest in this, and an even healthier dose of common good, but on a personal note,
he leaned forwards and put his hand on hers,
I would like to thank you from the bottom of my heart for your loyalty.
Her face gave a strange twitch at that, and she stared down at his hand on hers, jaw muscles clenched almost angrily. For the briefest moment, he had the bizarre feeling that she was about to cry, or perhaps punch him in the face. Strange reactions, in a way, to the heartfelt thanks of one's monarch. But in the end, all she did was give him a stiff nod and ease her hand from under his, rubbing the back of it with the other as if his touch had burned her.
"We're done here,"
she yelled at the door. By the time it swung open and Halda stomped back in, Vic did not look like a woman who had ever shed one tear. She curled her lip at Orso with immaculately acted contempt. He hoped it was acted anyway.
"Fucking idiot doesn't know anything," she said.